Hello, everyone. My name is Alf Lamont. I was formerly the VP of Marketing and Development at the world-famous Comedy Store, a comedy club in Los Angeles. I am now the Chief Content Officer, which means nothing, of Adler Integrated Marketing. I'm also the head of the comedy department there, which consists of me. So, and welcome to Political Humor 2.0 to Internets is Leaking.
Are leaking.
Sorry?
It's are leaking.
Are leaking. Internet are leaking. Sorry.
We blew it. It's
and that's
rude.
The reason it's named that.
Start
and,
over.
And not the internet's are leaking or the original title, which is How the Internet Saved Comedy and How Comedy Will Save the World, is because there wasn't enough room on the titles. So I came up with Internets Are Leaking, which in retrospect was a dumb idea.
And also, we wouldn't have done it if it was called How Comedy Will Save the World.
No.
Right. That's also part of it.
Right.
We're world destroyers.
Right. So let me introduce you to our panel in order of least attractive. We have Rory Albanese, who is...
Thank you.
That. We got a lot of fans
an
down here.
An applause break. Wow, Rory. It's like somebody told them to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's weird.
Nice job, everybody.
Right. So Rory is the executive producer of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's also a stand-up comic. Yeah, Jon Stewart fans.
Thank you.
All right. And then the next one is a tie. So we'll just start with...
Come on, Al.
See, do you see how I played that? not just a
Make
pretty
a choice.
Face. All right.
Make
so we've
choice.
Got to my left here is Sarah Benincasa, author... comic, writer for Wonkette, and what else do you do?
I'm actually an ex-writer for Wonkette, and
right,
now I am
Wonkette,
a political...
Sorry.
I am the GOP analyst for Vice.com, which is very important. And I also write about politics for ExoJane.com, and today my article was called It Sucks to Be a Lady in Texas.
Not you, just in general. She was appalled that it sucks to be a lady in Texas. Yeah. And then on my far left is Carol Hartzell, the comedy editor for the Huffington Post. Yes? Thank you.
It's pretty good. That's all there is to know.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So this is our panel. Mr. Greg Proops, as I mentioned earlier, will hopefully stagger in or maybe not. He's been felled, but... You know, hopefully he'll be in good shape for his shows tomorrow.
Hashtag where's Proops.
Right.
Start it right now.
All right, so let's get this started. The internet is kind of a wild place, and as far as content goes, I feel that there's a certain amount of... the shareable content is limited to the following. Music, funny, and news. And the funny and news seem to have been
there was
budding.
Was the fourth one you mentioned
yeah.
at lunch?
Did I say? Well, the fourth one is porn, but yeah. we don't really.
That's good.
We're not
right.
dealing
we
with
don't
that,
really share porn.
Right.
I don't really share porn.
If you're stingy, you don't share porn.
Right. And so these folks here represent that point where social media and the internet and comedy and news are intersecting. So my first question, it's going to start with Carol because. Well, I wrote it for her. There's a statistic that cites that anywhere between 20 to 40% of adults under 40 get their news from a satirical source. So that would include The Daily Show. That includes The Onion. There was D.L. Hughley's weird CNN thing. There was Fox's...
I actually still get all of my news from D.L. Hughley, so you guys know. He doesn't have to be on CNN. I'll just give you news if you...
So there was Fox's half-hour comedy hour, and then, of course, there's the Huffington Post. And a lot of people get their news from the Huffington Post. Why would a news source have a comedy section?
Well, let me go to sort of the first part of what you're talking about. When I first started watching The Daily Show and reading The Onion, I was still living in Alabama, and it felt like an antidote to me, like things feel so absurd in the real world, in the real political scene, but... No one was saying to me, it is absurd, you're right. And those were the places where I started to get decent information, but have a spin put on it that made me feel less crazy. And like there were other people out there who felt disconnected and confused and utterly baffled by just everything. And so I think there's that aspect of it. Like you're just sort of searching for some sort of validation that you're not necessarily insane when things seem weird to you. And then why Huffington Post has a comedy section, one, people just like watching funny things on the internet, and we're a website, so why not have that stuff on there? But two, Ariana loves comedy, and I first heard about her because of Al Franken. So it's always been part of, she talks about the DNA of HuffPost, and comedy has been at the top of that list since it was founded. And our editor underneath her, Roy Seacoff, he was a stand-up comedian back in the day, and so they just sort of had that in mind from moment one. So it comes from them, but it's also the readers love it. Like they come to our page because we sort of are like a digest of all the funniest stuff on the web right now. And we, do like the best clip from The Daily Show the night before, and we do the funniest cat video we saw that day, and we do goofy slideshows, and then we do original reporting on comedy, and we do our own original comedic spins on the news. So it's it makes sense for us kind of in every possible way.
Right. And is there ever a time where, is news news and comedy is comedy and never the twain shall meet? Or is there comedic integration into the news and vice versa?
Yeah. I mean, when you go to the front page of Huffington Post, it's news, but there will always be a comedy piece on there, something from our page. Like, we'll put stories on our page, and then we'll suggest things for the front that we think, a wider audience will be interested in. But it is sort of, the whole site is orchestrated. Like, you go to the front page for your news, and you go to the politics section for more news about politics. And if you want world news, you go to, these other things. And if you want comedy news and to see original comedy, you go to the comedy page. But yeah, there are certainly overlaps. When Stephen Colbert ran for president, there were overlaps, and politics filed on it as a politics story, and we filed on it as a comedy story. And it was really interesting. Like, they were kind of taking the really serious aspects of what he was doing and how that was going to affect the political world. And we looked at it from, holy shit, this is the biggest comedy story ever. A comedian has really integrated himself into the process and is using satire to draw attention to something that not everybody understands, which is campaign finance and Citizens United. And that was sort of our take on it. But yeah, you always have those things where they overlap.
Rory, I think this speaks directly into what you do. Is there a moment where you feel that you guys cross into politics and away from satire, or are you guys just straight up satire? Is that something that's
No, I think, yeah, I mean, we're never deliberately, we're trying to do, and this is a thing that people always give us a hard time about, but all we're trying to do is be funny. And we do that within the context of the truth. And we, for us, the goal is to put together a show that lives with a kind of a narrative and and makes sense and has a point of view, but is not necessarily politically motivated or politically active, which is sort of like where we always run into the bigger questions about, like, do we have some larger political goal? And really what we're trying to do is just synthesize what's happening on a day-to-day basis in the news, put it together so that it makes sense, and then make it funny. Making it funny actually, for us, sometimes is easier, particularly with, if I don't know if you've seen any of the people running on the Republican side, it hasn't been that complicated. But all due respect to the candidates, they're just there is a sense that some of them are insane. But we, for us, it's the same thing with the Democrats. When they're running, you sort of put the army of people out there who are dancing around. It makes it easy for us, but we're never approaching it from the standpoint of, oh, this is a great political message to get out there, ever. We're always approaching it from, this story is a gold mine for comedy, and in the 22 minutes of our show, this will provide a lot of comedic content. That's just always the approach, and it's always been the approach, and it is because it's a comedy show, so we just don't traffic in the larger. We don't really think about what the larger issue would be or how people are going to take it, more than we say, like, this is funny, and it makes sense as a whole. So,
Right. And so you guys both, you know, there's a certain aspect to, I would say, the purity of comedy. But it's hard to deny here with Sarah writing for Vice and you, Rory, and Carol with the Huffington Post, that the internet, at least in comedy, tends to lean left. And, you know, I recently got in a discussion with Dr. Peter McGraw, who's doing research onto why things are funny, and he says there's actually no good science to explain why comedy tends to lean left.
That's such a bad idea, science. I talk about the worst thing ever. It's like, let's figure out why that's funny, you know? Like, then it just takes all of the joy out of life, you know? It's like, let's figure out why ice cream's delicious. What? Just let it be delicious. Just let it be delicious. I guess, I don't know. I don't think the internet leans left. I don't know. I read a lot of things on the internet that don't seem that left, particularly comments about things that are written by people who seem to spend a lot of time on the internet based on the amount of stars next to their name as far as their validity on whatever website it is, you know. But, I think that there's, I think that there's probably a fair, Drudge is pretty big. That doesn't seem too left. It's got a siren. I mean, I guess that's kind of Breitbart. The reason we know who Breitbart is.
Sarah, you had an interesting running with Andy.
I did. We were on a panel together at this clusterfuck called Blog World, and
I went there as a kid.
This guy went to Blog World.
The lines of the roller coaster.
And we did this. We did this panel together where we talked about political humor and comedy in general. Not just political humor, comedy in general. I forget. I just remember all the really angry sales and marketing managers who could not believe that I said the word fuck on stage, and all the hate mail I got after. I offended a lot of product managers.
You just did it again.
I twice. Know, you guys.
We're going to get hate mail.
Oh, Sarah at sarahbenicasa.com. But no, I sat with him.
Wait, that was just a plug.
And I talked to Andrew beforehand, and I was sort of fascinated by him. At the time, I was still writing for Wonkette, and Wonkette always went after him pretty strongly, and it was very strange to meet him. And he said that he saw himself in the tradition of the merry pranksters, that those were his heroes, countercultural heroes, like, you know, Ken Casey. Those were the guys who he really looked up to, and that he actually was a huge comedy fan. And when you look at his work and the stuff that he did, I can kind of see that, because he was into disruption and into fucking with people and destroying their lives, which was a little more extreme than what the Merry Pranksters did. But he was certainly into causing chaos. I think that he was a comedic force, and I don't think he got enough credit for... Credit's the wrong word. I don't think that enough people recognized that what he was doing was taking joy in making a mockery of things. I think more people were just like, he's just evil. And it's like, well, you might think he's evil, but the dude has a whole philosophy behind it. And I think, like, similarly, I think Coulter is really funny. Like, she's really funny. I wish she was ours. I would love to just get her to sit her down and just be like, Anne, like, you've been doing this thing for a while and it's been working, but come to our side. It's fun. We're better looking. We're generally better human beings. Like, just come on, dude. Like, some hot chicks will make out with you at a party. That's something you should try. Like, just come on to the liberal side.
So you agree with her?
I don't want her on our side. I just want to...
I also want to just... I'm not on a side. I just want to just be clear about that. I like Ann Coulter for the reason of her... I don't really like Ann Coulter. I guess that's a bad example. But I really do
Roy
try.
Albanese
I really
Ann do Coulter. Try that's
to. I really do try to, at least going into our show. I know every night we really do try to. It feels like the term fair and balanced is now corrupt because of Fox. But yeah. I do feel like it's important to come at politics, even comedically, from both sides, and it's important. And we've done, I think, for us, it was a big change with our audience's reactions when we started in 2008 going after Obama. And first, it was Hillary. We started making jokes on Hillary, and the studio audience was going, well, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, and it's like, they're in charge now. Like, we get to make fun of them, you know, and we do it with Obama a lot. And it took a while for people to realize that sort of what we do is poke fun at the system, you know, and poke fun at the process and Washington itself and like sort of the, you know, the cesspool that has become. And it's easy to fall into, especially it was for us with Bush being in office and him being an easy target. Cheney is an easy target, you know, like you play the Darth Vader theme and you're good, you know, it's like, but we do that now, you know, against Obama. And it's, I think, made the show much better, but it also has just made the show consistent, which is an example of saying, like, what we're doing here is taking what's in the news, taking what's in the media, and putting a satirical spin on it, you know. And it was tough to make those adjustments, but it really, it's the same process. It's what does the president say today that's absurd? Let's talk about that, you know.
Well, I think people get that you guys aren't ideologues and that...
I don't think they do, but we're not. But I do. Right. Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Some people get
it. Some people get it.
But Alf, just to go back to your question in terms of why does it at least seem like more comedians and comedic voices are liberal or progressive? One thing that's always occurred to me is that I think comedians tend to be more self-conscious and more, you know, self-searching, and they question themselves a lot. And there's a lot of angst that goes along with that. And I grew up in Alabama, so one of the things that I noticed with people who were fiercely conservative is that they sort of live their lives where they're ticking off a list. Like, okay, I know what I think about that. Okay, I know what I think about that. Set, done. Like, that's who Rush is speaking to a lot of time, is people who already agree with him. And if you are a comedian, you tend to be more questioning, and you tend to not close those doors on ideas that you've already decided about. So I know plenty of conservative comedians, but I have come across way more progressive or middle of the road people, and I think it has to do with a little bit of that insecurity that makes you maybe a little more human, a little more flexible. I don't know.
I also think it's part of it is a lifestyle, particularly as a stand-up. It's tough to like go to church on Sunday and do what you do all night Saturday as a comedian. You know, I mean, the two don't meet. You know, I mean, it's like you have to be able to sort of say what's on your mind about either group, and then I think ultimately you end up seeming more left. But that's just because, to me, the term conservative means conservative in the sense of, you know, you're not you're going to steer away from cursing, you're going to steer away from kind of making like bolder, more I don't know, I wouldn't say bolder statements, because plenty of conservatives do that. We just talked about Ann Coulter, but there is something about comedy that has a recklessness to it that doesn't really adhere to a conservative lifestyle, you know. It's like the reason like Christian rock bands aren't as good as regular rock bands. You know what I mean? They're just like
Jars of Clay is fucking awesome.
You know what's missing there? Heroin. You know, like I don't know. Like if you gotta light your room on fire at some point to like really be good, you know. And I don't know. You know what happens like when rock stars go sober? You're like, it's not as good. You know.
I also think that as a performer, and I know Carol regularly produces shows, and Rory is a performer as well. I have found that extreme, like any audience that identifies with a particular extreme, is going to probably be a shitty audience. Mm-hmm. So if I would feel almost as, even though feminists are like my bitches, I would, and they love when I call them that. But I would be almost as hesitant to do, say, like an NRA convention as like the hippie tree-hugging feminist lactation council. Because when you have people who are extreme and identify with an extreme point of view, there's a rigidity and there is an inflexibility and other euphemisms that mean the same thing. And they're not so inclined to laugh. And they also have these very strict rules about what is and is not a sacred cow. And it can be completely the opposite for different groups, but it's tough, especially if you like to push boundaries and make people a little bit uncomfortable as they laugh. I find those extreme groups to be a real problem as an audience.
So can any of you name me your favorite conservative comedy website? Anybody out there, too, please. We can open this up.
Foxnews.com.
Yeah. Conservative.
Wait, hang on. Because
what is it?
Guido Fawkes.
It sounds better with the British accent.
I did research for this, and I have to say, I had a hell of a time trying to find a self, you know, proclaimed conservative comedy website, or even a website that has both conservative news, like the Huffington Post, that identifies itself as conservative, and has the comedy aggregate. So,
well, I mean, Dennis Miller has sort of taken.
Comedy.
Okay,
I'm just kidding. Dennis is great.
I love Dennis Miller. Yeah,
I was joking. Dennis Miller and Victoria Jackson seem to be.
Well, Victoria Jackson, come on, that's now we're getting into that's just a crazy time. You know, I mean, there's just this. You know, I feel like if you're trying to compare one to one left and right comedy, you know, I think a lot of comedy websites just don't identify themselves as left. You know, I think they're just comedy websites. And when you're saying how many right-wing comedy websites are there, how many left-wing comedy websites are, you know what I'm saying? I feel like you're already making a mistake if you're like, I'm going to make a website that's left-wing for comedy. It's like, try being funny, you know what I mean? And then, like, make a comedy site. And then, I don't know. It's a bad idea, I think, to pick a path politically before you go after what's funny, because you're going to just miss so much funny on either side, you know? And you got to be the comedy first and then everything else second, you know?
I was just going to say,
if you want to be funny, if you want to be a president, then don't do comedy first. That's a bad idea.
I keep jumping on top of what you were saying purely because I wanted to say poop in front of this crowd. Poop jokes have no political affiliation. And cats falling off of pianos have no political affiliation. And I think that there is a reason why, you know, we can make fun of it and be like, oh, God, this video, this cat video, or like, oh, this stupid video where this guy gets hit in the nuts. Well, that, you know, guys getting hit in the balls is hilarious.
But which nut? Is the left or the right nut? You know what I mean?
That makes... But I think that's why that's the most popular comedy content on the internet. It doesn't have a political bent.
All right, so we moving on, because we could spend the entire time talking about this, but right now it seems like comedy is on the up and up. Way to go, guys. you know, it seems to me like there are some very major power plays being done by political humorists. The Rally to Restore Sanity / Fear, that was a step towards activism. Stephen Colbert's fake run and what he's doing with his super PAC. And also, you know, we have this incredible amount of comedy podcasts. Is comedy actually becoming a powerful movement in the world of politics and beyond? Or is comedy affecting not just online culture, but culture overall? Is that something that's actually going on? Or is it really just trivialized? And I'm thinking that because I love you all.
I think Colbert Report and The Daily Show have been incredibly influential in making politics cooler to talk about also. You know, making politics more interesting, because you can start out by saying like, oh, did you see that thing in The Daily Show last night? It was so funny. And then all of a sudden by the water cooler, you're actually talking about like, you know, some Senate appropriations bill or something. I think it's a very sneaky way, Rory, to inject political discourse sort of into the common conversation.
We actually, our main business is water cooler sales. So really the whole thing is just to kind of increase revenues on the back end. I don't know. I think that, I really think political satire has been around since politics has been around. I don't think it's new. I think that the internet makes it more accessible to people. I think that The Daily Show happens to be a very web-friendly show in the sense of you don't have to watch the entire show. You know, it's broken into three segments. There's the first act with, you know, John doing jokes about X, you know, usually something kind of in the mainstream of, I would say, social or political issue, depending on the week. And then you have act two is something maybe a little lighter, or a field piece where one of our guys goes out and does something, and then the third act would be an interview. But all of them live on their own. You know, they all live as little self-contained nuggets of comedy. So we've had a huge increase in web traffic over the last, you know, a year and a half, 2 years on our website. Comedy Central has done an amazing job putting together a website that's very sort of user-friendly and you know, we tweet out things that are worth watching, and it gets passed around. But I don't know that it's, I would say that maybe it does what Sarah's talking about, which is makes it easier sort of to have a conversation about it. But, and I don't think it's unimportant. I don't want to give the sense that like comedy and politics don't work well together. But I think comedy is a good, you know, sort of a good tool, I would say, to sort of bring some of this stuff to light, you know, and like and can be sometimes can be a disinfectant. Colbert going around with a super PAC and then realizing that you can have a bunch of money that you can spend on anything is a good thing for people to realize, because it's pretty absurd that that is legal, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see how absurd you can get with that kind of money, and then maybe people go, hey, you know what's funny, that thing Stephen Colbert is doing is real and legal, and maybe, you know, that they should reform that a touch, you know. So I think that's okay, and I think that's an okay way to get it out there. It makes it a little bit more palatable, you know. It's like a kind of a spoonful of sugar thing. But I don't know if the goal of any of this is larger in the sense of like, oh, you know, the rally or anything like that, to like really change the world, as much as it's to say like, hey, we're all feeling this thing and it's kind of absurd and we should laugh about it a little bit so that we all don't go insane, you know. And I think there's like a balance there and between activism and you know, it's just the term activism to me has a connotation that there is a larger motivation, that there's meetings like this between The Daily Show where we're like, here's our goal, everybody, you know, like we have to get out there and prove to them. It's not. Our comedy meetings are a bunch of comedy writers sitting in the room trying to be funny, you know, and when, you know, when they leave our show, they go write comedy movies or they go work for Conan, you know. They don't go, you know, they don't go down to D.C. and lobby, you know. So I'm saying it is a comedy world first. And, you know, George Carlin was doing this for a long time. He just didn't have a show, you know what I'm saying? And he had his HBO specials, and they were on before the internet was on. So, in fact, you should go on the internet and watch them. They're still very good. But so I don't think it's new as much as there's more access to it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are just talking more about anything altogether, and comedy is so basic, everybody wants to be funny. So, you know, when the 24-hour news cycle happened, people were talking more than they had been before, and now we have Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest, and everybody's talking about everything and taking photos of everything, and everybody still is a kid who wants to make somebody laugh. And so you've got more people being funny in a more ways than they used to have access to. And so to me, it's not like comedy is on the rise. It's just, wow.
Oh, it's getting romantic. Rush.
Was I going off on the wrong direction? And they were like, killer. I think it's, we're just hearing each other more.
Whoa, my necklace. Where's my necklace? I had a big diamond. What? This is turning into a murder mystery weekend, everybody. Lock the doors. Line up. We have suspects. I know who did it.
My overall point is that comedy isn't organizing. It's not becoming a party, and it's not going to have its own convention and run somebody for president, I don't think. I think you just have more people talking and more people trying to be funny. And because there's more access, you do have people like Colbert doing what you were just talking about, where they're shedding light on something important using the medium that comedians have always used to do that.
Yeah. I also think comedians in general, like, don't care that much. You know, like, I really think they care about being funny. That's kind of the whole fun of being a comedian, is getting the people to laugh. And then if you get other stuff out of it, great. But, you know, if you hang out at a comedy club, you know, and you talk to comedians, even if they're really politically bent comedians, like, in the back room of a comedy club, they're just, you know, making boneheaded jokes and having fun. Like, that's kind of what's fun about comedy. It's light. It's funny. It makes you feel good after you watch it. For maybe the hour you're at a comedy show, you're not thinking about, you know, other crappy things that you could be thinking about. So there's that, you know. And it's like, the minute you start taking it too seriously, I think, or scientifically dissecting, you know, the meaning of it, you can run into a dangerous place where, like, you know, you uncover the fact that people just laugh at poop jokes anyway, you know, which is, by the way, as a stand-up, Every comedian has had this experience. We have it all the time at The Daily Show, where you spend all day writing these jokes that you think have like this brilliant juxtaposition to prove that the, you know, the left and the right really aren't all that different, and you put this whole thing together, and this is the response, and then John's like, poop, and everyone's like, oh, he said poop, and you're like, yeah, well, it wasn't that hard after all to get everybody to laugh, you know. Sarah, it happens as a stand-up all the time.
I mean, you've positioned yourself as somebody who does have that sort of political inclination. And Carol, I would say, even though you're in what's considered a left-leaning publication.
We're beyond left and right.
Right,
now.
Sorry. The progressive political blogosphere, I believe, is the but you have positioned yourself in a situation where you do have pet causes, and you approach. Sorry, you don't.
No, okay. No, I'm looking at you with those big eyes are a sign of arousal, not of fear.
Okay, sorry. So how is that experience for you?
Well, it's interesting. I think that when you position yourself in a specific way as a writer on the internet, and you become a part of people's daily life, and you're not like particularly famous, they feel an intimacy and a connection with you. And if they're used to hearing you spout the same stuff, and then one day you come out with an opinion that's a little bit different, they sometimes get angry about that. Like, to find out that you don't actually toe whatever line they have established. I find it really fun. I enjoy it a lot. It made meeting Breitbart was really fun. I am sad that he's not with us anymore, because I said when it happened, I was like, you know, sometimes it's sadder to lose a joyful foe than a joyless ally. And it's always neat for me to meet people who are very conservative identified, who've read anything that I've done, which is very few of them, because finding the similarities is always interesting. We're trying to be provocateurs. We're trying to get attention and do it in a funny or outlandish way.
And do you think being funny has helped that message?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't do political stuff on stage. Like when I do, I mean, more and more I've been focusing on writing, but when I perform, I talk about like men and women are different. And then I cry and I'm like, I'm a girl. It's so hard. No, I don't do that. But I know I should. People are loving it. But I talk about dating and sex and more kind of universally relatable things. But just writing about politics for whatever reason it's really fun. I mean, my hero is Molly Ivins, like just amazing, you know, she's the best. RIP, she's awesome.
Nice. So would you guys say comedy has sort of a long history of being sidelined? Would you guys say that the fact that it is a comedy show, and sometimes when you do want to get a point across, it's lessened because you're doing it with a joke? Or does the joke embolden it?
No, I think something to keep in mind is being funny is hard. So I think that there's a, not disrespect, but I don't think people realize how hard it is to be funny and to be consistently funny. And how hard it is to take stuff like torture at Guantanamo and then make an 8-minute segment on it that's funny. Or watch 5 hours of C-SPAN footage of like wonky BS on the floor of the Senate and then synthesize that into 8 minutes of like sound bites and funny faces and things. Like, that's hard to do. And so I do think that there is, I forget the question. But the point is, I'm a hero, is really what I'm getting at. I think that was the point.
You are already.
Oh, no, but
you
the point, the question was about...
Does comedy help push the message?
Yeah,
I think
it makes it more appealing. I think when people say, I mean, we hear this all the time, oh, I got a lot of my news from The Daily Show, you know, my first reaction to that is stop, you know, don't do that. I always say it's a good place to start, especially for college kids. It's a big thing. Oh, college kids get their news from The Daily Show. All right, well, at least they're getting some news. When I was in college, I didn't care about the news at all, so that's fine. But it's a good place to, it's a launching point. Say, oh, wow, that thing happened, but we did take a 5-hour Senate hearing and turn it into 6 minutes of comedy with some sound bites. And although it's all true, and we have a very strict fact-checking team, and we really make sure we don't get ourselves into trouble as far as manufacturing anything, it's a place to start, and it's not a place to form your opinions. And I would never watch an episode of The Daily Show, have somebody watch an episode of The Daily Show and said, yeah, now you're ready for a political debate or a political conversation, because you're not, you know? So you can if you're really into politics, it's a good place to start, because it's like kind of sweet and easy to digest, and it's fun, and John's amazing, so it's a fun show to watch. But So the comedic, the comedy makes it easier, I think, to put out there to people. It makes it more palatable than just sitting around and talking about politics. Because I don't know. I mean, it's like, have you ever sat around and with people who are really into baseball, but like really into baseball? You know what I mean? Where they're like, "That's not true. We're 1944," and you're like, "Oh my God!" You know, like, just calm down, man. That's what happens when you have political conversations. So if you can put it into a discourse where, you know, you can joke about it a little bit and say, oh, yeah, well, the left did that. That was pretty funny. The right did that. That was pretty funny. I think it just makes it a little bit more palatable. But and I do think making it funny is difficult, which is why Colbert is successful, why our show is successful, because people have tried to do that a lot, and it hasn't worked. But I don't think that it is the is that a Polaroid?
Yeah, that's a Polaroid.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really cool.
I think I was making.
You're
going
to need to take four of those, by the way.
It's like, here we are at the South by Southwest interactive panel, and a dude's using a Polaroid. You know, like,
that's so
Carol.
Cool.
It's
so awesome.
You have content. Does the that's, you know, like this morning on the Huffington Post, just shake it. I hear that. Yeah. does putting something humorous like the Rush Limbaugh?
These guys did that over here. The comedy editors are over there.
Hands up, Huffington Post comedy editors.
Yeah, that was brilliant. It was such a simple concept. And I walked in one morning, they were like, here's this idea we have. And I'm like, great. Just do it, and they did, and it's amazing. It's just Rush Limbaugh's face with inspirational women's quotes on top of it, and it's like, how many is it? Like 10, and it's hilarious and meaningful, and it did really well too. It was exciting,
but there's a message to that.
There is. I mean, I'm going to do this quickly, but just your question made me think. Like, my political beliefs and all the beliefs I have been formed by years of people making me question things. Like when I was a kid and wanted to be a cheerleader because all the other little girls were cheerleaders, my mom was like, why would you want to do that? You could just go do something yourself instead of cheer for somebody to do something. My mom is very conservative now, but she instilled this sort of progressive thinking in me. And then, you know, as I got older, it was comedians. It was Bill Hicks and George Carlin and people like that who, you know, they brought up important issues in a hilarious way, and that is what sticks with you, and you chew on it for days and days, and it forms your way to walk around the world and look at things. So I don't think that messages are reduced at all by coming in the form of comedy. I think that's how you get them to stick with people, and it's extremely powerful. And I know so much of who I am is based on comedians that I was exposed to at an early age, so...
That is really well said. I completely agree with that. I feel like you remember things. You know, I don't know. I mean, I can think back to opinions I formed when I was a kid, and like they're because like Bill Cosby did it in a comedy special. You know what I mean? And then later on, because Carlos Mencia stole it. You know, I mean, it's like really. But that's true.
Cows.
They have. There's something about seeing it put in a laughing through it and laughing through like something that has more meaning, and then afterwards going, wow, I you know, George Carlin changed my views on the environment just now, and I was laughing the entire time. You know what I'm saying? I think that, again, then you take that information and maybe do a little more homework and say, maybe I won't just completely take George Carlin's opinion on the environment, but it is a great place to sort of begin the journey of knowledge.
So are we laughing more now because there's more... Are we laughing more at politics now because there's more political humor content out there? Or is it because we need to laugh more? Or what do you guys think? Is it? I mean, have things gotten so horrifically bad that if we don't laugh at it, we'll go crazy? Is that?
I, you know, I don't know if that's true, because I'm thinking actually what Carol just said very eloquently made me remember that one of my first comedy, like, beloved comedy influences was Art Buchwald. And that's probably why I do what I do now, because I read his stuff when I was 6 and 7 and 8 and didn't know who Sergeant Shriver was, but thought that he was making hilarious jokes. And I think that, so what I'm trying to say is that, as Rory pointed out earlier, there's always been political satire. I think people have always been cracking up about it. But I think, to go back to something Carol said, there's just more of it now. It's more accessible to everybody. I don't think that we're necessarily laughing more. We just have more options about what is going to make us laugh.
So would it be safe to say then that the accessibility of comedy mixed with politics is making people more aware?
I would say that the accessibility of politics, meaning these guys can't hide as much as they used to. You know what I'm saying? And I think the one thing the internet is doing that's positive is exposing things. And you can't be corrupt. And there is a lot of that that's happening. And I think that the more information people have, and the more sort of exposure that's being put on this process, it brings out more examples of things that are hysterical, because you can't even believe that they've been happening for as long as they've been happening. And, like, the best thing you can do is laugh, because the other options are, like, go insane, And I think that part of what's happening as well, and again, these opinions I'm expressing here are my own, but I also feel like a lot of the people that are going into politics now are... seems to be a different breed of people, and that could be because of the environment that we've created. In other words, the media environment and the scrutiny that we put on people's private lives and things like that aren't really as important as the decisions that they make that impact all of us, but makes the pool of people that are getting into politics sort of less impressive. And as less impressive people go into it, I think that there's more of a comedy to be had. I'm not quite sure if FDR was president right now if it'd be as funny. I don't know. I mean, like, you listen to fireside chats and I'm like, not a lot of jokes in there. That guy kind of seemed to know what he was doing, And then I think there's part of everything we do now, there's a video record. I mean, that's one of the things that The Daily Show has been so successful with. It's like, do you remember you said this 2 days ago or like 2 years ago? And it's very hard to, even with Obama, it's very hard to stomach the whole, like, the day I get in office, Guantanamo closes, it closes, gets in, big fucking thing, he's got the pen, he signs it, Guantanamo is still open, it's on videotape. And that was sort of one of the things we were talking about with the Breitbart video. It's like, yeah, we have this video of him from 30 years ago hugging a guy. It's like, how about this video from 2 years ago where he said something while he was president? You know what I mean? Like, that's more damning than the 30-year-old lost video, So I think that's part of it. I think that the internet and media, and there's an exposure now that's happening where there's video of everything. And like you said, people take pictures wherever you go. I mean, I parked my car at the airport before I came here, and I took a picture of where my car was parked because I didn't want to write it down, And so it's just, I think as that happens more and more, you're going to really end up with more transparency. Like it or not, there's going to be more transparency. And with more transparency comes more absurdity, and with more absurdity comes fuel for comedy, So I don't think comedy is leading it as much as the internet is helping in exposing a lot of this stuff. And I think that's positive. I mean, I think it's positive that Twitter helped cause a few revolutions in the Middle East to, like, turn over dictators. Like, that, everyone has, like, this negative bent that the world is heading towards, like, this mega apocalypse and we're all going to die. And, like, on the flip side, like, maybe it's not. Maybe we're all just going to, like, get on Twitter and be like, how about nobody pick up their guns today during the war and, like, and, like, tell the politicians to go fuck themselves. Good idea, and then we don't have to fight anymore, because you realize the guy you're supposed to go into battle against is just put on Facebook that he wants to get drunk too. And you're like, I'll just get drunk with him, maybe there could be a positive outcome of this. And I think that connecting everybody through the internet is good. I mean, and I think that's positive, and I think that we'll get more comedy out of it, but hopefully more than comedy, we'll get more truth, and then you get truth, and then people are held to a higher standard, and then only people who can live to that standard end up in charge. And then, over time, possibly things, you know, seem more positive, is what I would say. I'm trying to be more positive these days. You don't have to clap.
Oh,
I'm
wow. just thinking,
yeah. I'm also doing a motivational speaking thing. But that really is how I think about it. I think that it can be used for good and porn, but good. You know what I mean?
Good porn.
Is really
good.
It's about
it's
good porn.
Good.
Yeah. It's interesting because there are Twitter is, you know, creating careers in comedy. Mm-hmm. Not a ton. I'm not going to say start a Twitter account and you're going to be famous in 5 minutes.
She just said it.
I did say it. but it would be interesting to see if someone could develop a legitimate political career coming from the sort of internet grassroots like that. Because I think that's the only way the system starts to change is if you can get people to become powerful who weren't already powerful. And that's
but
been...
honestly, like Joe the Plumber.
Oh, yeah,
right?
That's
He's
true.
Running for Congress. Joe the Plumber.
I take back everything I just
no,
said.
No, I'm saying. But that's the guy. That's the guy, yep. Joe the Plumber. And
but he didn't do that. Like, he was, like, called out by another...
Yeah, he asked a question. This is the most fascinating thing about Joe the Plumber. He asked a question to Obama that said, he said, I'm planning on starting a business that I think will make... or earn over $250,000 a year. Not I make over $250,000 a year, and I don't agree with your tax plan. When I start my plumbing business or whatever, Joe the whatever business I'm going to start, and it makes over $250,000 a year, I disagree with your tax plan. And it's like, well, first of all, start the fucking business, yeah. And then complain about the taxes, see if you can do it, because that's a tough thing to do. But then he was grabbed. The media grabbed him.
Yeah.
And now he's, I don't know, at some point, I think if he's out there enough and... you know, he's being interviewed by CNN. He had a whole thing on CNN saying, gotcha. He's using the Palin thing, gotcha journalism, which isn't that the whole point of journalism, to get people? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like an oxymoron. That's a gotcha journalism. Well, what am I supposed to do, you know? Trying to get you to say something. So, like, he could become a congressman, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was McCain mentioning him in that speech. Like, McCain created the meme,
yeah.
Joe the Plumber.
He also released the Kraken that is Sarah Palin. You know, I mean, he owes us a lot of apologies, that man. But you're right. I think that there will be more of that.
Yeah.
And I think he's not strictly from Twitter, but he's like he's the first example of a guy... maybe there's more, maybe you know of others, but it's like he just seems like a guy that came out of nowhere and now is somehow still on my television.
I do,
you know,
wonder if it would have happened if his name wasn't Joe.
That's like, a good question.
Like, he's just a regular Joe.
Yeah.
If his name was Francis, would he care?
I think if his name was Francis, he doesn't get picked up. You're absolutely right. Francis the Plumber just does not sound like it. Frank the Plumber's not bad.
That's a good point.
That works. Frank the Plumber works, Rory.
No, I agree.
Frank
the Plumber
work.
Well, or Mario or Luigi would work because people like those guys.
So just so the audience understands, comedy has been affected by the internet enormously. And there have been, as Carol mentioned, a lot of careers launched on Twitter. And not only that, but social media has done an incredible job, and the internet in totality, has done an incredible job of removing gatekeepers and middlemen from the world of comedy. So for the most glaring example is what happened with Louis C.K. recently. Louis C.K. Released his own special, produced, directed, wrote, performed, and released his own special online and made over $1 million. And you can knock at Comedy Central's door till you're blue in the face. I don't think they're going to give you $1 million.
Jim Gaffigan's doing the
Jim
same
Gaffigan's
thing.
Jim Gaffigan's about to do the same, exactly. So what we're speaking to here when they compare their hopes for politics is basically what's happened. Am I right here in comedy, which is the removal of these faux gatekeepers, these people who keep basically you and I out of certain things, and you know, allow that to politics to start working the way that it should, like Rory said in the Middle East, where one guy tweets another guy, this is a bad idea. Yeah, I think this is a bad idea, and then it suddenly becomes a movement. So I think it's very poignant. And then the other thing is, comedy and politics are intersecting in a way that everything is intersecting, but this intersection is a very powerful one. And so whether it is intentional or not, comedy is affecting the political discourse. And I feel in a very positive way, because these people here, as we will find most comics, are committed to the truth. There's always some truth to comedy, small, big. And what you'll find is that each civilization is not going to be judged on their history books. They're going to be judged on the art and literature of the time. And comedy as an art form is starting to define what our time is. I'm very, very excited, very happy to have all of these guys here. Let's give them a round of applause, and then we're going to go to questions for the audience. So, are there questions? Yes, there are. Okay, so this is how it's going to work. Sit down. You'll be first, but what we'll do is this lovely lady over here is going to go to you with a microphone, and she will allow you to ask the questions.
I think the big point that you guys are kind of dancing around not getting to is that political comedy seems to be inherently left-leaning at the moment. I think you almost touched on it because it's built around truth, and almost all the lies that are coming out are coming from the right. I mean, I just did some quick research. All the comic stuff that's come from the right has failed over the past couple of years. You had the Fox News half hour. You had An American Carol. You've watched Dennis Miller's career go down in flames. I know, like, you can't get up there and say that. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Like, if you bring up Breitbart, he was a comedian. To who? Nobody. He had true believers who flocked to him.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was like,
you beat
isn't
me to
that
it.
The truth?
I gotta just say the best part is, kid you not, this guy has a smiley face pin on his coat, which is just so, which is
no,
such a
shot
nice.
Shot in the head.
There is a bullet in it. Okay, then.
It's the Watchmen, right?
Just wanted to make sure.
Oh, good.
All right. Okay. No, so what was the question?
Aren't you avoiding the central point, which is that comedy, political comedy, is inherently leftist?
I don't think it's a void. I mean, there's nothing to avoid. It's not like
Stephen Colbert said. The truth has a well-known leftist bias.
Well, I think the truth, here's the thing about truth in comedy. Whatever kind of comedy you see, everyone's had this experience where you're watching a comedian on stage and he could be talking about how women want the toilet seat up and men put it down. Da, 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 da,
we
da,
do.
People fall in. There you go. You see, it's working. But and then everyone's laughing and somebody turns to the guy and goes, "It's so true. That's so true." And it's like, it's the expression, it's funny because it's true. And that makes things funnier. It's funnier when things are true. I can't say that the all of the lies in politics come from the right. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of them come from the left. And I think that maybe... I don't know. I mean, I think there's just a lot of lying on both sides. But
lies just come from politics.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, I think that's
agreed.
Part of it.
What I will say is that most comedians that I know who identify as political comedians, let's say I know 10, 9 of them are liberal. But we're doing two things here. We say political comedy, and then we say comedy that touches on politics. I know a lot of comedians who lean left, but most of the time when they're doing their sets, they'll have a little politics thrown in, but they're kind of being who they are, and who they are isn't just about politics. But yeah, if you want to talk just hardcore political comedy, most of it that I know about is left.
But it's also easier. Like,
yeah. And they do those for left-leaning audiences.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I just think, like, if you want to be a political comedian and you're going to make fun of George Bush, like, it's easier, you know? I mean, it's easier to do that. You don't have to be as... You don't have to be... I think it requires less talent in some cases. When you have, like, a guy like Rick Santorum who's taking an anti-college stance. In other words, like, that's funny. Like, who the fuck is against college? You know what I mean? Like, that's like, people shouldn't read. We don't think people should read. I mean, that's absurd. So sometimes it's easier, you know? And there are plenty of things on the left to go against, but sometimes you got to dig in a little too deep. You're like, you have to understand when they tried to pass, McCain, you know, like when you get into the wonkiness that is politics, it's you quickly the setup. When the setup's not clean, the joke's not as funny. So all of a sudden, you're getting into like campaign finance reform, or you're getting into these things that are all over. You know, they're like there are a lot of inconsistencies on the left, and they're saying things and doing other things. But sometimes with the right. At least lately, like George Bush was an easier target for comedians. He just was easier. But don't forget, when Clinton was in power, it was all blowjob jokes. You know what I mean? And like that might not have been political based, but he was the president. It's like it's just sort of the easiest thing, you know. And I think that that becomes the most popular thing. And right now, you know, Rick Perry shooting a coyote while he's jogging is pretty easy.
All right, this gentleman over here in the platinum.
Yeah, speaking of sacred cows, the Daily Show did a great critique of a bill called SOPA a couple months ago that Viacom lobbied very hard in support of.
Yes.
Colbert, 2 weeks ago, spent the entire second act of his show making merciless fun of one of his sponsors. It was a fantastic segment.
It was amazing. Yeah,
was it Wheat Thins?
Wheat Thins. Yeah.
Which, by the way, they loved it. Just so,
yeah. How much of a constraint is the hand that feeds you, and is this different for a cable show versus a purely internet vehicle?
Well, the internet is the old west. I mean, you can do whatever you want on the web, unless it's under, you know, the Daily Show's website. I mean, in other words, but if you have your own website or you want to put something on YouTube, you can do whatever you want. Nobody can really stop you, except for the companies that, if you put up a movie or something, they'll, you know, take it down or whatnot. But I don't know. I mean, we have to be careful. You know, we basically have an opinion on that, which is if we want to do something and we want to talk about something that's in the realm of what's happening right now. I mean, if it's important enough to be in the mainstream news, and I mean mainstream across the board, as in newspapers, TV, NBC nightly news, like actual all news sources. I don't mean that in like the Fox News versus MSNBC sense. But if it's out there, then we have a right to talk about it, even if it's our parent company. You know, it's you don't always want to go. We don't want to spend every episode ripping on the people who cut you paychecks, but we would not do it because of that. I mean, it was a real thing, and it seemed like an absurd bill, and it seemed like an absurd thing to like just have a kill switch on the internet for that. So it was funny. We did it. As far as sponsors are concerned, you know, that's sort of case by case. You know, I mean, there is a reality to being on TV, and like you need cameras and lights and somebody to pay the electric bill. So you probably, I mean, the reason Rush Limbaugh apologized is because sponsors started backing out, you know? So like that is also something to keep in mind, that everything you watch has a big corporation behind it. I mean, that's a fact.
It's totally different. I mean,
you guys sell ads.
We sell ads, but I mean, maybe it just hasn't come up. I don't know. You know, we poke fun at whatever we want to poke fun at, and but you know, we have our sort of own integrity about it, and we go based on what's funny and what we think our readers will be interested in, and we haven't had any pushback on what we're, you know, allowed to talk about in terms of that. So
yeah, we do the same thing. I mean, we just basically do what we want to do, and then like let the lawyers sort out the mess. You know, like that's kind of our philosophy. And Comedy Central and Viacom are amazing. I mean, they really don't give us a hard time. We just don't have that kind of relationship with them. They understand what the show's about, and they get it, and they let us do our thing. So if we're going to go after something McDonald's did that's absurd, and they're a sponsor, then we're probably going to go after McDonald's. I mean, we're not going to not do it because the sponsor tells us not to. You know, but if it's just, but we wouldn't do a segment called McDonald's sucks for no reason. I mean, that would just be stupid. You know, like, I mean, it also just wouldn't be that good because McDonald's is incredible. You know what I mean?
All right, is there anything you guys want to plug, Sarah?
Oh, yes. I do a podcast called Sex and Other Human Activities, which is very fun. We have a sponsor, and it's a dildo and butt plug company, and they do not give a fuck what we do. So, yeah, it's called Sex and Other Human Activities, and I have a book that just came out. It's called Agoraphabulous, Dispatches from My Bedroom, and I'll be signing it at the place where people sign books after this.
I don't have anything to plug. I'm on Twitter. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I can pick up about 12, 13 followers from this. It'd be pretty sweet.
Are you Rory Albanese on
Twitter? I'm at Rory Albanese, yeah. It's pretty awesome. Sometimes I tweet maybe 2-3 times a week. It's pretty epic.
But when he does.
Yeah, but when I do, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just take the afternoon off.
It'll change your life. It'll change your life. Yeah, I've had people, I have a lot of success stories from my followers that come out. Their lives changed. They changed pretty quickly. Yeah. You know, Bill Gates, he started by following me. That's true. That's when he came up with the idea for Microsoft. True story.
You know, HuffingtonPost.com/comedy is where we do most of our stuff. I, too, am on Twitter. It's Carol R. Hartzell. And follow HuffPost Comedy on Twitter. And follow us on Tumblr and Facebook and all of those. Do we have a Pinterest account yet?
What is that? Pinterest?
Don't worry about it, Rory.
Something.
I've seen it. Sarah J. Benincasa.
I just learned about Foursquare.
Unless you're planning a wedding, don't worry about it.
Pinterest freaks me out. freaks me out.
Oh, that's right. This is a nerd crowd. I totally forgot. That's awesome.
If you do Pinterest go to HuffPost jokes. Comedy, we're doing a live blog of South by Southwest. We're here the entire time for all the comedy, so follow that.
And also, I'd like to plug something for Carol. She recently did an interview with a comedian named Jeffrey Ross. She has some incredible insight into the world of comedy. I highly recommend you read anything she writes in particular. And that's all the time we have. Thank you all so much. We'll be out shaking hands and drinking water and going to the bathroom.